Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's the Search Update.
All right, the latest on the Search Update for the Texans, Eric Bieniemy is on the radar now. They put in a request to interview Eric Bieniemy, Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator. The Texans, unfortunately, can't actually execute that interview now until the Chiefs get knocked out of the playoffs. And I don't know if y'all have noticed this. The Chiefs are really good at football, and they have the home field advantage, and they had a bye last week. So chances are, the odds makers would tell you that the first chance that the Texans are going to get to interview Eric Bieniemy may come after the Super Bowl, which is, if you like Eric Bieniemy, a little problematic because there are several other teams that have at least had a chance to Zoom interview him, Seth, because they got in their request. But now Eric Bieniemy, I believe, is the only candidate to have requests from all seven teams with a vacancy right now.
Yeah. I wish I could be a fly on the wall for these interviews. The reports were that he interviewed very well in Atlanta. And Atlanta might be the front runner in my mind for where Eric Bieniemy might go, actually. I'm still kind of I got worked up. I've been texting with John during the break.
Oh, okay. Did you guys try to smooth things over?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, don't you know the whole thing about John is John knows me. John is I'm more embarrassed that I lost my temper like I did because I haven't been operating that way for a while. But
you
this
haven't.
Is what,
you
frankly, almost... everybody, this is the havoc that that you find in the path, or excuse me, in the wake of anything Jack Easterby related. He turns us into our worst versions of ourselves.
What in particular triggered you right there? Because you made it to 8:51 in 30 seconds without exploding on him. I thought we were going to make it to the end of the hour.
Well, honestly, you know, because John and I have butted heads on this before where, you know, I'll say, look, I think Jack Easterby was way more involved in personnel than they would have you believe. Right now, it seems like the Texans or Jack Easterby is somehow excused from all the bad decisions that Bill O'Brien made. Whereas before Bill O'Brien was fired, that he was side by side with Bill O'Brien the entire time. Remember during the draft, Bill O'Brien said, if we lip read properly, Bill O'Brien said, that's your pick, Jack, after the Jonathan Greenard pick. It seemed like he was very, very involved. On the Texans website, it says that Jack Easterby was a part of all these personnel moves, you know, that have shaped the current team as they are.
That's the interesting one to me.
Yeah, like the actual website says that Jack Easterby is involved in these personnel moves. So when John and I butt heads, it's because John will say, well, Bill O'Brien had final say. It frustrates me extra because I think this is what Jack Easterby is good at. Jack Easterby is really good at making people believe that they are coming to decisions on their own and that Jack Easterby isn't actually wielding any power, right? Because when somebody influences you, sometimes it's really hard to recognize the power they have over you because they're not explicitly telling you, Bill, do this. Cal, do that. Bill and Cal start to think, wow, you know what? I really value Jack's advice. And because of that, I'm making this decision. But mostly it's me. Because ultimately we all like to take credit for things, don't we? Even if we're good, magnanimous people. So, and I think that's what Jack Easterby is really, really good at doing. So that's why I get frustrated with the final say discussions because it somehow creates this perfect world where Jack Easterby, where he's not held accountable for the bad decisions and yet praise is heaped upon him for the good ones,
right,
you know?
Right. Well, let's go there now, because we had a former pastor, a retired minister named Rick, call the search special last night. For those who don't know, we've been running a search special every weeknight at 6 p.m. after Clint Sterner in the show, and we will until the Texans find their next head coach. We're going to do a 6 o'clock special for an hour every night and just sort of recap. Last night's turned into more of a recap of the Andre Johnson stuff than anything else, but we're doing that every weeknight at 6 o'clock. So last night we took a lot of phone calls, including this one from a retired minister named Rick, who, this is one of the best calls that I've ever heard, laying out exactly what he thinks Jack Easterby is trying to accomplish behind the scenes with the Houston Texans. Take a listen.
Yes, well, my take is I'm a retired minister, and I can tell you there's a lot of ministers that I know personally that think they're on a divine mission to set up a culture. And I can tell you that Cal and Easterby and Caserio are going to dig in on this. Because what's happened, and what I believe that Deshaun's upset with, and Andre's upset with, they're gonna make a stand even against the players. The only thing that would turn this is season ticket holders abandoning the Texans, and this is why, because they are all aligned. If you go back and listen to the presser with Caserio, and think about three things: the culture, Deshaun Watson, and Easterby, and re-listen to that presser, mm-hmm. you will hear that they are aligned on this one thing. We're going to build this culture. That's what Easterby has sold to Cal, and he's aligned with Nick on it. And the three of these guys believe they're right, and they believe that this is what's best for the Texans. And I don't care if JJ and all of us storm the building, they feel like they're doing the right thing. And here's what the problem is they feel the culture that Easterby is promoting is above the Super Bowl. It's above winning. I've seen this so many times. It's all about your culture, your mandate. And this is how it comes across to Deshaun Watson. It comes across like this: I'd rather have David Johnson in my building than DeAndre Hopkins. I'd rather have Whitney Merciless in my building than Jadeveon Clowney. I'd rather have Eric Murray in my building than Tyrann Mathieu. That's how it comes across the players. It's confusing because they're trying to win a Super Bowl, and the organization is trying to build a culture, and they clash. And it's not going to work, because what they need is leadership. A culture flows from leadership that can lead them to the Super Bowl. And so the players are seeing it, and they've known about this. And I really believe that I saw this when they let go of Dwayne Brown, and I'm thinking, what are the Niners thinking? Well, what it is they want to build this first-class organization culture, and what it's costing the fans is going to be, and the players, is a chance to win a championship here in Houston.
Yeah.
And so they're going to dig in because they have a righteous cause.
That is one of the best sports talk calls that I've heard in a long, long time. Seth, the part that really kind of clarified it for me, and probably was the easiest part to consume for fans, and I think in Rick's point, this is the part that is being consumed by players. This was the easiest part: choosing David Johnson over DeAndre Hopkins, choosing Whitney Merciless over Jadeveon Clowney, choosing Eric Murray over Tyrann Mathieu, particularly those first two, because I think Hopkins and Clowney were two guys that were glitchy with the leadership of the organization, specifically Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. I think O'Brien liked Mathieu. Those two, though, I mean, two of the biggest failures on the roster, David Johnson and Whitney Merciless, for two of what had been the best players on this team over the last half decade, Hopkins and Clowney. And it was that was the part for me where I go, man, this dude is onto something right here. It's one of the best calls I've heard.
Yeah, and it really is. You know, the other way you could put this is true believer syndrome. There's this phenomenon that happens when somebody latches on to something, when they're a true believer in a concept, a philosophy, sometimes a cult leader. Nothing anybody tells them will dissuade them from that belief. And in fact, anything you can tell them that is against that belief just labels you as an enemy. And that's why cults are so dangerous. That's why that true belief in something that is sometimes damaging or sometimes just a myth or what have you, can be incredibly damaging. That's what it feels like you have going on here, where Steph Stradley called it toxic positivity.
Yep.
Hey, any complaints are just people that aren't true believers, and you got to get on board or you got to be out the door, okay? You hear me, Deshaun Watson?
That's a scary, scary phone call if you're a Texan fan or you're someone behind the scenes over there that sees what's going on. And Rick, who called in, actually texted us, said he's been trying to get through. He's got another take, how to repair the damage. And actually, he's calling in right now. Here is retired minister Rick, who called the special last night. And he's joining us here on Payne and Pendergast. What's happening, Rick? Great phone call yesterday. Appreciate you calling in.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Look, I'm just a diehard Texan fan, and You feel like you don't have any control because you don't.
Yeah.
But your heart's breaking. I just had some ideas of how maybe we could get this turned around. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to kind of point out is, like, hey, everybody wants their light to shine. You know, when you're trying to do the Lord's work, you want your light to shine. But you got to be careful about not taking that light and start inspecting people with it. And, you know, every team needs a code of conduct. The league has a code of conduct. You got to have rules. But that doesn't make you like the inspector of who's going to come in our building, because you don't want to put your light in a room and only let certain people in. I mean, you may not want an AD on your team, but that doesn't mean that you should start inspecting DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And what I want to say is that, you know, I don't think Bill Belichick had Jack Easterby in a role in New England where it was going to stop them from winning a Super Bowl, because their number one goal was to win a Super Bowl in New England. And, you know, if you think about it, you go back to the presser, they didn't mention winning a Super Bowl in the press conference with Casario. They mentioned everything being about building their culture. Mm. And so what happens is, I believe, this is just my opinion, but what happens is the players are super hyper-focused on winning a Super Bowl. Just look what Andre's comments were. Yeah. Don't waste a career. They're laying down their life on the field. Seth did the same thing. You lay down your life basically for the team, for the goal of hosting the Lombardi Trophy. But when you, I don't think, Jack Easterby is trying to do wrong. Bill Belichick had him in a role that helped the team because he was helping individual players. But it wasn't making decisions that would conflict with winning a Super Bowl. So if you bring him to Houston and you don't have him in that same role with that same person, like a Belichick that's focused on winning a Super Bowl, then what happens is, if you give him collaboration or whatever you want to call it, but you become aligned with them where you're making group decisions. Well, his vision may be a culture, and he may think that my culture will eventually one day get to the Super Bowl. Well, what's going to get you to Super Bowl is having playmakers, impact players on that roster in the right system, in the right scheme, with the right leadership to win a Super Bowl. Now, you want them to have the code of conduct. You want them to be good teammates, et cetera. But you're not evaluating your personnel based on the culture alone. You're basing it on, will this player in this scheme help us win a Super Bowl?
Rick, we got to jump in. We appreciate the phone call. I think we're understanding the point. It's funny, Seth. Rick brought up a great point there, and we can react off of this in the next segment, but just real quick, because I know you've got some things you probably want to say. We'll carry this into the next segment. I just did a search on the transcript of the press conference from last week, the Cal McNair, Nick Casario press conference. The word culture is said in that press conference no fewer than a half dozen times. The word Super Bowl was never uttered once during the press conference. I think that crystallizes it right there. We're going to react off of some of what Rick said as we head into the next segment. What are the odds that Jack Easterby is around week one? We had that question yesterday on the text page. We'll dig into that as well. Payne and Pendergast rolls on next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with all of you. We just got done talking to our retired minister friend Rick, who called the search special last night and then called as a follow-up call. And he made the point, Seth, that the press conference to introduce Nick Caserio last week, that I think there's no better way to illustrate just how the organization is prioritizing culture over results. Not one mention. This, by the way, from a new general manager who won six Super Bowls. You know, who was part of, he didn't win them. He was on in an organization that won six Super Bowls. He was part of six Super Bowl championships. Should it be disturbing that the word Super Bowl was never brought up a single time in the entire press conference? Like, literally, you do a search on the transcript, and the word Super Bowl isn't in there. You search the word culture, and it looks, the document looks like it's got chicken pox. There's all kinds of little spots where the word culture gets brought up when you do a search find on it.
Yeah, that's you know what? That comes down to some of it just being the MO. You know, various coaches and people, they don't want to put it, they just don't operate like in a brash manner when it comes to, I don't know, but yeah, at least even given. It's one thing to say, get up there and be like, we're going to win a Super Bowl in the next 5 years versus saying, hey, the goal is to win a Super Bowl and we need to work. You know what's a good word to use? Championship. Like championship caliber, this is what we need to do. We're focused on winning a championship. How do we do that? You're right. And it is, and like this is, my criticism would be, independent of Jack Easterby, I'm not criticizing Jack Easterby per se right here. There has been, there's like this movement almost where people have carved out a niche for themselves where they're just totally obsessed with culture to the degree that it like almost supersedes actual competence. Like people are so, and I talk to, honestly, frankly, a bunch of boomers, so take it for what it's worth, but a bunch of like, I'm not a boomer, but I act like one in some ways, but when I talk to people who are in management these days, like in normal companies, not just football, although I hear this in football too, there are people that are like, okay, we're in these meetings, and I got a bunch of really young, fresh, idealistic young go-getters, and I love them, but sometimes it's like they just, every time we start a meeting, it's like they just watched 8 motivational videos on YouTube, and we can't just get down to business because they won't shut up about busting out of the paradigm and fixing the process and doing the culture, this and all that. It's like sometimes like when your car's oil needs to be changed, you got to just get in there and change the oil. You just got to get your hands dirty. And that's what I worry about. So like so many people are trying to copy the New England way, that they like dissect it, they hyper-analyze it, they try to figure out how it all works, when really the very first mantra of the Patriots has always been just do your job. You know, there's not really anything romantic about it. Belichick's not great at giving speeches. I don't know how much he knows about culture other than he knows that he knows that at times he's a bit much and that he has to try to figure out a way to soften those edges. But it doesn't have to be some vast, you know, 18-chapter motivational guide as to how to construct your football team. But people are making good money selling that notion and that idea.
What are the odds that Jack Easterby is still with the Texans when the season begins in week one?
Let's see. I would say I think there's a very good chance that if Jack Easterby is here, there's a much better chance that Deshaun Watson is not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, what do they care about? They care about culture. That's they pray at the altar of culture. And I don't know if there's anything that Jack Easterby can do to regain the trust of some players in the Texans.
Yeah, that ship sailed.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know. Is Caserio and a new coach going to say, no, don't worry, Jack Easterby will just be off in the shadows and you won't see him? Because at that point you say, like, okay, well then what is Jack Easterby good at again? Because in New England, it was all about, like, hey, fixing one-on-one relationships with people and everything. Then you put him into a completely different role here. And I'll agree with our previous caller, Pastor Rick. I don't know if Jack Easterby is aware of what he's doing and the damages he's causing. Because I think he drinks his own Kool-Aid. I think he's a true believer in his message. But he's not qualified to be doing what he's doing. But he's got this way of separating himself from the bad decisions and attaching himself to the good ones, like on the team's website, which two listeners pointed out, thank you, where they flat out say, on the team website, together with head coach and general manager Bill O'Brien, Easterby helped reshape the Texans roster prior to the 2019 season. But when it's time to pay the piper, And when it's time to be held accountable for things, oh, well, no. Jack's not actually involved in all that. I know we've been saying he was all along, but Jack's not actually involved in all of that.
I think Jack Easterby winning people over, that ship has sailed as far as the people in the roles we're talking about. And the way I look at it now, Seth, after Andre Johnson's tweet yesterday, Jack Easterby's running a gauntlet right now, is what he's doing. And it started when he took this job last year. Part of the gauntlet was Brian Gain. He very easily won that battle. Brian Gain gone. Then eventually the gauntlet became Bill O'Brien. And there were others that fell along the way, J.J. Moses, Chris Olsen, all those things. But the next big opponent in this gauntlet for Jack Easterby was Bill O'Brien. He beat Bill O'Brien. The next gauntlet is whatever this tour de force is behind the scenes that's got the walls closing in on him. And so far he's managed to weather that storm. And the next opponent right now is Andre Johnson. Andre Johnson tweets that out yesterday. Does Andre Johnson and what he represents to the Texans, and to me he represents the voice of every former player that's ever mattered to the organization, is Andre Johnson big enough to cause some sort of change with respect to Jack Easterby? We don't know. That's the battle that's going on right now. If Jack Easterby is able to beat Andre Johnson in this gauntlet, he'll have beat Brian Gain. He'll have beat Bill O'Brien. He will have beat Andre Johnson. Yeah, I think we'll throw Jamie Roots' name in there. I look at the gauntlet. I go, okay, who's the next opponent for Jack Easterby? Because all of a sudden, not everybody's going to just come say kumbaya with him and say, well, you beat all those guys. Let's fix this. It's not fixable at this point. To me, the next opponents in the gauntlet are J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson. I think John McClain brought up a great point, and it's Jamie Roots, but it's what Jamie Roots represents, and he is the conduit to the money in the community and the face of public relations and the business community. That's a huge one that nobody, until John brought that up, I hadn't heard anybody bring that up. And the very last one, Seth, season ticket holders. That's the last, if they begin to stop showing up to games, that's the last. If Jack Easterby weathers that, then the Texans are no longer a business. They are a mega church that's employing Jack Easterby as the pastor.
Well, this is, except Sean, you know what mega churches are really good at? They have to be very careful with the accounting and the finances and the collections and all of that. Yeah. A whole lot of cash you got to deal with. It's a nightmare, I'm sure. Like how much just administrative work there is. Since Brian Gain departed, the Texans have not been magnificent at all. A lot of the administrative stuff, lot of just the actual getting stuff done. And I think that a lot of people might really only know Jamie Roots from his book. And a lot of people kind of raised their eyebrows at Jamie releasing that book in the middle of a lost season for the Texans. Set all that aside, Jamie Roots is very, very good at what he does on the business side of things. If anybody is under the illusion that somehow Jack Easterby is going to step into that side and actually do it well, they are in for a rude, rude, rude awakening. Because, man, if there's one thing that you can't be when you're dealing with a bunch of high-priced suite holders, like people that run, that are actually like qualified business people that are CEOs of company and whatnot, they're going to sniff right through you when it comes time to renew your suites or take a pay increase or what have you. So you got to be super careful. If Jack Easterby is going to be in charge of, honestly, as somebody that cares about the Texans, I would issue this warning to everybody over there right now. You got to figure out a way to keep his paws off of that, because that will not go well. I know fans probably don't care about that at all, but that speaks to the financial health of your team, how aggressive you can be in free agency. All of that kind of stuff starts with the actual revenue coming in.
Yeah, look, the one thing that Cal McNair has been allowed to do through this lost season is spend a ton of money to try to fix these problems, right? I mean, that they've thrown a lot of money at this stuff. They spent a lot of money to try to fix the roster, didn't work because of all the moves O'Brien and Easterby made. They threw a lot of money to make Bill O'Brien go away. They threw a lot of money when Rick Smith went away. They threw a lot of money at Brian Gain going away. They threw a lot of money at Corn Ferry, who ultimately went away. You know, who knows how the Jamie Roots thing is going to play out? I have no idea what that's going to look like. So Yeah, I mean, they've had the luxury of money. You're right, Seth. Boy, if Jack Easterby were to take over the business side of things, and by the way, Jack Easterby taking over the business side of things, his personality would already rub a lot of these CEOs and business leaders the wrong way. If he just came in a vacuum independently without any sort of history,
yeah.
That whole, hey, buddy kind of thing, you know, like where he's not a business guy, but he's just a guy of positivity and whatnot. Business people, most of them, are about business. And I think he'd rub a lot of them the wrong way. Anyways, now he's already coming in with a preconceived, I think accurate notion that there's not a lot of people that are pro Jack Easterby.
You know, I think one thing also that came up earlier was Brandon Cooks and, you know, his relationship with Jack Easterby, who Jack Easterby has gushed praise about Brandon Cooks before he was ever a Houston Texan. I read it differently when Brandon Cooks was asked questions this year and he answered them. He said nice things about Jack Easterby, but what I saw as a former player was the look of a guy that sometimes knows that he's been pegged as either the coach's pet or the GM's pet.
Yeah, the mole.
And you feel like, and I'm not saying he is the mole. Like, right. That's a whole different scenario. A lot of times your lower level guys are better for the moles because, like, they're desperate to do anything they can to stay on the
player,
team.
Yeah.
I think Cooks for a little bit gave me kind of that impression. Like, listen, I know what the perception is, and I'm not happy about that. But please don't put me in that box. And and that's where I want to like Brandon Cooks. I look at Brandon Cooks as kind of his own man. Now that he's on the team, no matter who was advocating before him or anything, I think it could be a valuable part of the team.
At 5:57 yesterday afternoon, Brandon Cooks tweeted, "Always listen and pay attention." Do we take that for anything? Is it?
I don't. It's hard right now because this happened to DJ Reader yesterday. DJ Reader tweeted something that everybody assumed was about Jack Easterby, and it turned out it was actually a political tweet.
Okay.
I don't even remember what it. I think it was about Trump. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I've got it right here. It said, "Oh, buddy, out of there tomorrow."
Oh, okay. So that was a 25th Amendment type of tweet.
Yeah.
But it was like in the heat of everything else, because he had also liked Andre Johnson's tweet about Jack Easterby, that everything, crazy times we live in right now.
We do indeed. All right, speaking of Andre Johnson, we'll go back through Andre Johnson's tweet and we'll ask the question, so what happens now? What it got everybody worked up yesterday. What happens now? That's next. Payne and Pendergast with you in the loop, jumps in top of the hour. So Andre Johnson yesterday, came out of nowhere, Andre tweeting where is it here? There you are, Andre. If I'm Deshaun Watson, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic. What happens from here, Seth? Does this just turn into the next thing that disappears into dust over there and Jack Easterby marches on his merry way? Do they bury their head in the sand? Do they ignore it? Does this matter?
I think that, for one, you got to remember Jack Easterby apparently has a very good and effective way of – it almost feels like that what people used to say about Steve Jobs. It's like a reality distortion field that Steve Jobs could put people into. Where they could get him to believe like whatever Steve Jobs wanted him to believe. Now, Steve Jobs used all of that to create the iPhone.
Right.
Jack Easterby has not created anything close to the iPhone with the Texans since he started
that. Used it to destroy the Texans from internally.
So I think that, but I do think that Jack Easterby has a way of framing information and getting people to believe certain things. And especially when. Especially when you spend maybe 8 hours a day around Jack Easterby and only a few minutes a day around various other people or input from your fans or anything else like that. It's really hard. It's really easy for Jack Easterby to get his side of the story across. With Nick Caserio, and I think we're all trying really, really hard to be fair to Nick Caserio right now, right? Because I think Easterby, when he was in New England, when Belichick had him in a specific role, and I know Easterby will claim that he was involved in all these different departments and everything, and I think he was allowed to go in and observe and offer suggestions and whatnot. But Bill Belichick had the reins on Jack Easterby. He had him in his appropriate role. Jack Easterby could work with players who might need guidance or help with certain issues or something. with Nick Caserio himself. It sounds like Jack Easterby really helped Nick Caserio out in his life. I don't know if it was his career, his personal life, whatever it might have been, but it seems like Jack Easterby is very good at doing that. The problem becomes when you put him into this role where all of a sudden he is actually being consulted on really, really important stuff. And also at the same time, for whatever reason, creating a lot of distrust amongst the players, all of a sudden he's the exact opposite of what he was in New England. Instead of players just loving Jack Easterby and just gushing about how he's changed their lives and what have you, you have a lot of current players who don't trust him. And how does Nick Caserio come to see that? Which players are comfortable enough telling Nick Caserio that? I think just by contract alone, I would say there's various players. I honestly, without even naming names, because I don't want to make it look like I know which guys are which. Sure. Or anything, the high-dollar guys can be somewhat comfortable, you know, telling Nick Caserio whatever it is they feel. Because, you know what, go ahead and cut me. I got guaranteed money on my contract.
That's right.
Or trade me. I got guaranteed money on my contract. I got a lot of guaranteed money. So they'll feel free to speak freely. You know, players who are towards the end of their career and maybe just are tired of dealing with guys like Jack Easterby and stuff like that. I think they'll be freely willing to talk to Nick Caserio about it. And if I think realistically, Nick Caserio, when he just gets here, he's been in town less than a week, he's hearing all this stuff and all these complaints. I think Nick Caserio probably thinks of himself as a guy that's going to be proactive and try to fix things. And he's going to try to fix it. And he's going to try to smooth things over and see what was going on with Jack Easterby. And I'm still naive enough to believe that maybe that could happen. But I don't know if some of the players, I think some of the players are firm enough in their conviction that there's nothing you're going to tell them that's going to make them feel good about Jack Easterby. And then you get to, you know what though? Maybe you get to a level of normal dysfunction. Like maybe you get to the level of like the normal NFL dysfunction where there's a few shady characters on every team. That's just, I mean, that's no big mystery. There's always shady characters on any NFL team. But can you relegate him to like a typical type of shadiness instead of like megalomaniacal Jim Jones shady?
The
you know,
shady
like
character this is not usually a team chaplain. That's the thing. Yeah, there's shady He's characters. Not, you know, hey, Antonio Brown, look, Richie Incognito, look, hey, the team pastor.
Look, he's not the team chaplain. Chap is the team chaplain. Oh. I don't even know. Greg, I can't remember Greg's last name at this point. He's the, we call him Chap. He's the team chaplain.
Okay. What the hell is going on, man?
That's like making somebody who's bad at math your accountant.
Right. Yeah.
Boy, the returns look great. I can't believe I got this refund.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I forgot to carry a few digits, but whatevs.
You're gonna have a few people in an organization that aren't creative at all. For example, our VP of marketing. Like, what? Wait, huh?
No, but this is, okay, to keep the accounting thing going,
yeah.
It's like you used a bad accountant to do your taxes, and then you're relying on that accountant to defend you to the IRS in the audit.
Yes.
So like with Jack Easterby, it's like, okay, Jack Easterby seems to have been part of creating this horrendous toxic culture. Luckily, we've got Jack Easterby on the staff to fix it.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Yeah. There was McClain had a quote, and I read it to him when he came on with us a little bit earlier, and it was in the article that he wrote yesterday, Can Nick Caserio Put Out the Andre Johnson Fire? And I actually retweeted the link to the article, and I cut and pasted the quote. And Seth, I don't know, man. Like, I read this, and the quote from McClain was, I doubt that Caserio had any idea about the mess he would inherit and the chaos that would surround him. Talking about the whole Easterby aura. And I said, John, with all due respect, if Caserio didn't have any idea, then he's an idiot. And I'll be honest with you, like, I don't know what would make me feel worse about Caserio as the general manager. The last 8 years worth of New England drafts, or if he was coming in the building here not knowing that he was stepping into, to call it a hornet's nest is an understatement. To not know that he was coming in here to some sort of issue, that would tell me he doesn't have internet access, because anybody can go read the article on SI.com and know that you're at least stepping into some sort of perception, if not a reality.
Well, and the problem, too, is that if you read that SI.com article and maybe you call your buddy Jack Easterby and ask him about it, he's going to tell you, oh, it's disgruntled former employees, you know how it is, or this, that, and the other thing. I don't know. That article, there is a whole lot of truth in that article.
Yep.
And if Caserio chooses to believe whatever Jack Easterby and Cal McNair tell him about that, and I don't blame – look, Cal, it's hard sometimes. You know what? This is why they have undercover boss, because sometimes even like really well-intentioned CEOs have a hard time knowing exactly what's being said at the lower levels because it's shielded from them from middle management. And a football team, it's really a lot like that. There's not like a – it's not necessarily a complaint jar for the players. And part of that's – if you're running your organization effectively, part of that can be good because you want to be able to have certain things separated from each other. But right now, I think that there's a whole lot of discontent amongst very important players like Deshaun Watson. Again, I'm not trying to say that a football team needs to be a happy, happy, joy place all the time. There's always a lot of stress and a lot of pressure, and it's a high-performance, high-pressure business. That's fine. But when your most important players and some of your historically best players who are not complainers, these guys are not complainers. Deshaun Watson is the opposite of a complainer. He stuck by Bill O'Brien and tried to do right by him, you know, and when those guys are complaining, you cannot use being in the front office as an excuse anymore for not knowing what's going on beneath you.
Yeah. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in on the show.
Our caller, Rick, the pastor that has called in a couple times in the past 24 hours, is now a huge Brandy, my wife, actually thought he was great, which is rare because Brandy's not usually she's a sports radio aficionado. Callers are not usually her favorite part of the show.
She likes Rick.
And so for her to really love Rick, yeah, that's
big.
That's something.
That's
yeah.
big.
All right. Hey, hands off my lady, Rick. She's got a, you know. She's got a thing for older Italian men, we've discovered, and it's like ever since she was like, wow, D'Antoni's really a handsome guy, you know? He's right. I was like, all right, yeah, you mentioned it like 7 or 8 games ago. Mm. You don't have to keep bringing it up, okay?
Okay.
So if Rick's Italian, you can stay the hell away from this show, Rick.
D'Antoni is kind of handsome. If she starts mentioning Tony Siragusa, that would be where I'd start to get a little bit concerned.
I don't think she's that's
then it's a full-on Italian fetish.
This is what she does. She knows what she's doing. She tries to only compliment the guys who are much older than me.
Right.
So she makes a thing like, no, they're distinguished looking.
Ah.
It's just he looks good for his age. Like I know what's going on here.
let's go to the southwest side. Ken's been holding. He wants to get in. Ken, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We got a problem here. I was thinking if Jack Easterby can't solve his own problems within the organization, how in the hell is he going to gain the confidence of any player to work out their problems? And he's good at what again? I'll hang up and listen.
All right, thanks, Ken.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Ken echoing my favorite question. What's Jack Easterby good at?
Yeah.
And I think, Ken, the answer to the first question is, okay, how is he going to be good at hammering out guys' personal issues? I don't think that's necessarily his job anymore. I think that was his job in New England, and he was good at it. By, you know, Matt Light and some of these other players would say he was indispensable in how he helped them when he was in New England. So I'm not sitting here trying to paint Jack Easterby as like this guy who's all bad or anything. But in his current role, I don't know how much. I think that's part of his current role. I know there are some players who. who kind of chuckle at that being his current role.
Oh,
I mean, maybe he's helping out some players on the team too, though. But it's just when you are a guy who's at the very top of the organization and is responsible, as the team website says, for making personnel decisions, that becomes different. Then all of a sudden you're a decision maker. Like, I'm not going to go to my boss's name is Armin. Well, actually, I probably would go to Armin with some personal problems, but I'm his top performer. So, I would go to Sarah Fraser. I'm joking, Sean.
Jackass.
I'm joking. So, would I go to, let's go to the CEO.
I just hate the truth that you are his top.
What's the name of our CEO again?
David Field. Yeah, oh, you're the top performer in Houston. Didn't know the name of the CEO of the company.
So, am I going to email David Field tomorrow and be like, hey, David, I got to tell you, honestly, I've got an insatiable lust for the ladies. It's tearing my life apart. Can you help me out with it? I can barely concentrate at work.
That's what Easterby is.
Hey, David, I got to be honest with you. Look, I've got access to cash at the office quite a bit, and it's getting really super tempting for me to take care of some of my gambling debts.
It'd be a big problem. Oh, man.
Somebody's going to go to Easterby and like, hey, listen.
Well, when you're put in a, you pointed this out, when you're put in a position where now all of a sudden you're making decisions on people's careers, you can no longer be the confidant. You know, you can no longer be the character coach. Seth, you got to bookmark that page to see if it stays the way that it is, to see if that phrasing remains on there, right? Because wasn't there a point where Jack Easterby's title from Jacksonville back in the day was very inflated, and then along the way that got rectified.
Yeah, I was pointing out this where, frankly, I was a little bit insulted because I thought Jack Easterby might have been listening to our show, but apparently not, because for like the first year, somebody in Jacksonville had called me up and said, hey, his bio in this press release says that he was the assistant GM in Jacksonville. I asked around, and nobody knows who the hell this guy is.
Right.
And like, I knew somebody. There's one of the people I know in Jacksonville who's been with the team since the inception. And it remained like that for a while, and that's what it said back in New England, too. Florio noticed it this last season and put it out there, and then it blew up, and the team changed it to, I don't know, now it says, like, assistant to the GM or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
Yeah, so
quite
which is a big
title,
difference,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't on his official resume or anything, but it was on his write-up on two different websites for a long, long time.
All right, so the big story, Andre Johnson in the tweet yesterday. The other big story happened last night following the Rockets' loss to the Lakers, 117-100. James Harden finally started to bang his fist on the red button of getting him the hell out of here.
Which is not good enough. You know, we don't obviously chemistry, talent wise, just everything. And it was clear, like I said, these last few games, they just, you know, from the beginning of the game, they were just aggressive, veteran team, obviously, championship team, and, you know, one of the best teams that we have in this league. You know, I love this city. I literally, you know, have done everything that I can, you know. I mean, this situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, yeah, thanks.
So the two things that would appear to have picked up some degree of momentum yesterday, Seth, would be Jack Easterby's departure and James Harden's departure. Which one happens first?
Oh, that is a great question, Sean.
Yeah, I'll use it again in the 6 o'clock hour tomorrow.
that's why you are Armin's most valuable employee.
So, not true, by the way.
That is a great question. I think that Armin. I think
Armin's gone before both of them. No, I'm just kidding.
Honestly, I think Harden's gone first. I think that Casario. I think Casario has the potential to be a really good GM. I think Casario is going to know, he'll know that you can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater with any given problem as soon as you learn of the problem or the extent of the problem. So he's going to try to figure out how to work his way through this. Free agency does not begin this year. I think it begins at the normal time this year, which is in early March or so. So we've got 2 months or so before you'd have to make decisions about J.J. Watt or perhaps maybe try to trade Deshaun Watson. Nothing needs to be done.
And
God forbid that second part. Or like to JJ, like I think it might work out for the best for JJ, depending on who's here and who isn't. Like JJ might. Anyway, I think Harden's gone first. Harden's the NBA trade deadline is before or right around the same time as free agency.
That's what makes it a very interesting road these next several weeks. And in the meantime, the Texans still need to find a head coach as well. Seth, we are done. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you. Oh, and Brandy liked Ken, the caller, too. She said he got to the point very briefly.
He did. We like calling. Just so you, those of you who want to call at some point, just know the quicker you can get to the point and get in, get out, we like that as well. All right. We're done. In the Loop is up next, and we will see you all tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.